Very good. So let's do the projection. Very good. Thank you. So the topic for this evening is fate, free will, and karma. And the inspiration for that is when I was on the East Coast not so long ago, at the end of a home program, somebody who's a medical doctor asked a question. They said they have a relative who's an astrologer, like really into it kind of an astrologer. So their astrologer was curious, relative, astrologer, let me do your chart. They did their chart and said, oh, this and that and the other thing. And then went into this message, like, you know, his conviction that everything is already predestined. And this MD becoming kind of like, you know, new, becoming a devotee, that I didn't feel so comfortable with all that. I mean, they're my relative, and I'll respect my relative, but is it true? Everything is just predestined? That's our topic. What happened to the verse? Can you show the verse again? Thank you. I like the verse better. So, there's a role for each of those. Destiny. Fate. And free will. It sounds like it's either one or the other, but how can it be both, right? If you have free will, then it's free will, and if there's destiny, there's destiny, and how can you have both? Here's Prabhupada's answer. It's too simple, so I'll say it anyways. But it's everything is there in the little phrase. If you know that it's going to rain, you may carry an umbrella. So there's the class. Any questions? There are certain things that are destined. It's daytime. The sun is setting. It is going to be night. Supposing you don't like it's going to be night. Too bad. It's going to be night. It's destined. And then, don't worry, it's going to be morning again after some time. I don't know what the weather change was like, but I was in Texas, and one day it was 91, the next day it was 40. And the next place I was going was snowing the same day. Only it was, anyway, so radical changes in weather. What are you going to do when the weather is this and then it's that? Blame the weatherman. What kind of weather are you sending us, Mr. Weatherman? There are forces acting on our life that are outside of our control. Destiny. Or we'll look at, you know, there are different ways of reading. Influences, like astrology, is based on the position of the stars. You can say such and such is going to influence you. And that's destiny. Now, what about free will? Okay, something is going to act on my life. Now I have but I still have freedom to choose how I'm going to respond. Like, if you know it's going to rain, you might carry an umbrella. You might not also. You might stay indoors. You might go outdoors. You might do so many things. You have freedom within that which is beyond your control. You have the freedom of choice. You have the freedom of how you respond. And I'll come come back to that message, just go over here for a moment. One of the presentations that I was asked to make long ago, and then have kind of modified it over time, is stress management. The first time I was asked to do it, to make a presentation on stress management, was they were just at the University of Minnesota. They were opening up a huge, new, very expensive building in business school. And I forget the name of the person, but it was like a recent man who became like mega wealthy person, the something something school of business, the man that donated all the money for the school of business, they named it after him. And I was very surprised. Besides the new building, kind of like, okay, it's just like the ribbon cutting only happened a little while ago. The place was packed. It was huge, a hall as big as this, and there was as many people there for this presentation on stress management. I figured, boy, the business school, they must be stressed out. They're really interested. It was a two-day program. So one of the things in this stress management presentation is a little description of Viktor Frankl. Because, you know, they don't know Hare Krishna, but they may know some other things. So Viktor Frankl is one of the things that some people know. And maybe devotees don't know. A couple of people are nodding. Viktor Frankl. He wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning. Viktor Frankl was a Jewish psychiatrist who was in a Nazi concentration camp. And the book is about his experience in the Nazi concentration camp. But like, it's not so much the detail of, oh, how horrible it was. More of it was his internal reflection on how to address a very horrible circumstance. And the book is very popular. It was reprinted something like 19 times. Each time the printing get bigger, and it was so popular, they printed it again and printed it again. And one of the things that's nice about it, it's very small, a skinny book. But it's also very thought-provoking. And I'll do my best to paraphrase some of the quotes that directly relates to this. You know, he says, in a world that there are forces acting on us that are simply outside of our control, it's called, you know, fate, or providential events that are just intended to happen. There's nothing you can do about it. Like, you know, Dasarath remembering as he's about to die what he did when he was a young man that caused the curse of that old Brahmin couple when he had killed their son with his arrow at night. Because of that curse, he was now in this situation. It's beyond his control. But that which is beyond our control has something to do with the big picture of what's behind us. The big picture of what's behind us. I'll go to Mahabharata for a moment and come back to Viktor Frankl. In Mahabharata, just before the Yaksha Prashna section in Mahabharata, where the Yaksha comes out of the lake and asks questions of Yudhisthira. You're familiar with that section. So just before that, Nakula is asking a question of Maharaj Yudhisthira. And the question is, why are we put into so much difficulty? And he cites the difficulties, and then he calls to memory, you know, the good things that they've done. So he's done all these good things and good things and good things and good things. We're good people, we're virtuous, we follow Dharma. And there's all this misfortune. Why? So you've heard that question before, right? I can tell you as a sannyasi, it's probably in the top five of the hit parade of questions. Of, you know, why does this Sometimes it's an individual, more often it's another person they know. This person is such a good person, why these bad things happen to this good person? Why did misfortune come to a good person? But it's a classic question. Why do bad things happen to good people? There's a book written about it. One Jewish author, I forget his name. Harold Kirshner. Kirshner? Okay, it sounds almost like Krishna. That's one thing I know. Harold, you know, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Harold Kirshner or something like that. Anyway, why do bad things happen to good people? I didn't read the book, but somebody said his basic premise is he made a mistake. You know, he made a mistake. God's good. God's all good. But, you know, sometimes he makes a mistake. Something like that. That's why bad things happen to good people. It was a popular book. A lot of people like that idea. So, here is... Somebody's got their phone on? Maybe it's me. He's in a concentration camp. And he survived. And he explained in the book the reason he survived, he felt, is because he was heavily invested, deeply invested in a calling or a purpose. His purpose was when he got on the other side, when the whole ordeal was over, he would then be able to help people who were under different circumstances of stress in their lives address the stress in their life by his own experience of how to address stress. And his premise, one of his premises is there's something that can't be taken away from any individual, and that is their choice of how they're going to address the circumstances that life presents it, in circumstances that are beyond your control. So there's circumstances beyond your control. That's destiny. And then there's free will. You can choose. And that's something no one can take from you. Even Krishna doesn't take from you. It's intrinsic to the soul. Free will is there. So back to Nakula. The answer that Yudhisthira gives is you're thinking of the 12 years, I'm simplifying, but you're thinking of the 12 years in exile. And we've been good and good and good. But there's a big picture, not just this lifetime, but previous lifetimes. And the big picture is something's back there. We may not know what that something is, but there's something back there that's bringing the misfortune. So, although you're not seeing the big picture, you're seeing the small picture, understand for sure there's some cause behind the effect. That's the destiny. And that this verse that's projected up here is indicating, and the last line, sada sadyoni janmasu, where the good fortune and ill fortune were the cause. So the first part, purushat prakriti stohi bhunkte prakriti jan gunan. The word purusha in this case is not Mahavishnu. It's the living entity who thinks he's Vishnu. Purusha, the so-called purusha, the imitation purusha, the one who's trying to be the enjoyer of prakriti is purusha. Prakriti sto. He who is situated, ta means situated. Prakriti ta. The living entity who is situated in prakriti, trying to be the enjoyer of prakriti, bhunkte, enjoying. Bhunkte, prakriti jan gunan. So, the translation, the living entity in the material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying, or at least trying to, enjoying the three modes of nature. So that's the picture. Living entities imitating God within the field of material nature, trying to be the enjoyer of material nature in a variety of ways according to the modes. That's us. And then the second half is karanam guna sangosya, guna sangha, association with the modes. Karanam guna sangosya, the association that we have with the modes of nature is our choosing. That's a free will. We can choose this or that or the other mode of nature. We don't have to be conditioned by anger, for example, or lust, or greed. But they're pushing us for sure. That's the outcome of our previous choices. By our previous choices of association with the modes of nature and the activities that we've done, we get a body. Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita. According to the guna and karma, chatur varnamaya shrishtam guna karma vibhagasha. According to the guna and karma, back there, the previous, what we've done, according to our previous activity and choices of free choices of modes of conduct, we are awarded a body with a certain disposition, a psychophysical nature. And that's the destiny that we've created. Sadasat yoni janmasu. Yoni means a place of birth. Yoni is the womb of the mother is yoni. But it means, the material nature is the yoni, the place of birth of good fortune, ill fortune. And that's determined by the choices that we've made. And so destiny is coming our way, and now we're continuing to make choices. The destiny is what's coming our way from the previous choices, and now we have the choice of response. Like, let's just take my own life, for example. And this is what I said to the doctor. Do you think that I'm a devotee because it was just destined that I was going to be a devotee? Ask the astrologer. Have an astrologer. Have your relative do a chart. Oh yeah, he's going to be a devotee. That's not what the chart's going to say. The chart's going to say, what's the astrological influences upon this living entity, and thus he got a body. Born at this place at that time, and I'm passing through this period, and da-da-da-da, and these influences, and then something else and something else. That's what it's going to tell you. Those influences are going to be there. Just like it's going to be night, and then it's going to be morning. And, the summer is coming, and so forth. There are influences that are acting on us that are beyond our control, collectively and individually. Now we have so there's a free will to choose. Embarrassing, isn't it? There's free will to choose how we're going to respond to the fruit of our previous actions and association with the modes of nature. We have the free will to choose how we respond. And that's what Viktor Frankl says. Some people think, if I could just get rid of this problem, then I could be happy. They think of stress management as getting rid of the cause of the stress. And his book says, no. Some people think that way, but that's not correct. The stress management, or even literally stress-free situation, is where your shelter is. If your shelter is out there, I'll give another example. So I was at a program at Washington University, recently. That's in St. Louis. And there was a Chinese student who was attending the program, and he asked the question, can you give a definition of happiness? So I was thinking, from his perspective, you know, there's two kinds of happiness. One of them is, you know, the happiness of this configuration of duality as opposed to that one. This is happiness and that's distress. And one man's food is another man's poison. You've heard that phrase. Some like it hot, some like it cold. You know the rest of it? Some like it in the pot 3 days old. That's the mode of ignorance, by the way. So there are modes of nature, and people like different things according to the modes of nature. So that's one sense of what's happiness. But I respond, that's one idea of what happiness is, and that's not happiness. And then I express there's a certain kind of Buddhism that you're probably familiar with because you're from China. And I don't know how to pronounce the name, but the way it translates into English is the land of bliss. And there's a certain aspect or form or name of Buddha, and persons that are followers of Buddha but they haven't yet fully attained nirvana, they go to that place and it's the place of bliss. He said, yeah, how did you know that? He said, okay, so it says it's one of the teachings in Buddhism, or at least a certain type of Buddhism. And it's kind of like, but it's still material. And he said, yes, it is. Because beyond that is nirvana. What's nirvana? Nothingness. It's where you go before there's nothingness. So happiness isn't nothingness. Happiness is somethingness. So the land of bliss, that's another idea of what happiness is. But there's the Vedic conception, or the Bhagavad Gita conception of happiness is love, where the interest of the beloved and their happiness is my happiness. And that's only going to be achieved with a spiritual conception of myself as a spirit soul and God as a supreme spirit soul, supreme person, and the loving relationship with that supreme person. Or Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam, using my senses to please the master of the senses. That's happiness. Because the happiness is their happiness. And the happiness of love is the greatest happiness. So we have an opportunity to choose conceptions of happiness. The material conception, the trying to get out of the material conception, and the transcendental conception. With me. Even in an atmosphere where there are influences acting upon us that are beyond our control, and we may, by the first conception, look at them as misfortune, one can still be in a position of happiness. Or we can choose, at least, just to stay with the topic. There's free will choices available to us when it's going to rain, or when it becomes night, or when some calamity comes your way, or some misfortune comes your way. And depends on where your shelter is, what your standard of happiness is, how you perceive and how you respond. Now go back to Viktor Frankl. His idea was that when I'm on the other side of this horrible situation, then I'll be able to help other people. That's my calling. That's my purpose of life, is serving others in this particular way. So in the book, he gives this little example where they're confined in like corrugated steel, you know, like the ones that the steel goes like that, back and forth like waves, just like in tin boxes, one next to another, next to the other, so like solitary confinement tin boxes. And at a certain time of the day, at a regular time of the day, there's a rattling of keys. The soldiers would pass by and rattle the keys and jingle the locks to strike fear in the hearts of the people that were inside, because some persons were going to be selected to be dragged off to the gas chamber. It was torture. I mean, mental torture, just physical torture being in the box, and mental torture that who's going to be next. And then, you know, the chain would jiggle, the lock would open, and you would hear someone screaming as they were being dragged to the gas chamber. And all the other people thinking, oh, what a horrible thing, at the same time, you know, at least it wasn't me. And that would happen every day. Awful. So one day, sure enough, they came to his door. And he describes, I was thinking, I have this mission, I have this greater purpose. So he said, my heart was not struck with fear as I thought it would be when my day came. And sure enough, God gave some protection. What happened was, off in the distance there was some noise and some other soldiers were raising their voices, so he just left him standing in the middle of the field and went to find out whatever the problem was, and by the time it was solved, he came back. It was too late. The gas chamber program was over for the day, so he took him back to his little room and locked up the key. That was it. So he survived. His sense of why he survived was he had a greater purpose. I mean, God's intervention, obviously. But why God's intervention? Because he had a greater purpose. And he didn't succumb to this panic state, the fear of death. Somehow, God will protect me. So it didn't happen. So his advice is, it's not that by all means that the stressful circumstances have to be mitigated or removed. Rather, what's needed is this one thing. The thing that can't be taken from you, the freedom to choose your own way, the freedom to serve a higher purpose of life. So he had his higher purpose of life, and we have ours. You know, there it's personalized, like, so the generic way of describing is our purpose is to awaken our loving relationship with Krishna. And the form of that is particular. Somebody does it, you know, decorating and dressing the deity, somebody else in kirtan, someone else in, you know, building the temple, someone else in something else and something else, or maybe combination of things. And that's our expression of our wish to offer something to Krishna in love. When the Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan was opened, even before it was opened, there was a little lady, like a villager, a Vrijvasi lady, kind of obscure, nameless Vrijvasi lady. And she would, knowing that the deity installation was coming, she personally went and got Jamuna water that could be used for the Abhishek. And after the day after the installation and thereafter, every day, in clay pots, she would bring two or something, maybe it was even three, you know, like stacked on her head or something, clay pots, and just leave them by the pujari door. She didn't, like, wasn't asked to do it, she just did it. It was her seva to Krishna Balaram and Radhashyama Sundar. And then one fine day, the pots didn't show up. And the devotees were very curious what happened. They found out the lady expired. She left her body. And Prabhupada said, for that service, she'll go back to Godhead. Now, we don't know if she was chanting 16 rounds and etc., etc., but she was serving. Prabhupada made that statement. For that service, she'll go back to Godhead. So that's our mission, isn't it? To, you know, to not to go back to Godhead, but to be in service to the personality of Godhead. Let our body, mind, and words be used in service to the personality of Godhead, according to our psychophysical nature. So someone can do this way, someone can do that way, and we all, in a collective manner, we serve the personality of Godhead according to our nature in a coordinated fashion under some direction from some authority. And that's our mission. That's our higher purpose. With that higher purpose, when your goal is very clear, then when obstacles to achieve your goal come, it's just, well, how do you see it? It's part of your service. There's just varieties of opportunities to serve Krishna. It may not be how you planned it, but if Krishna has another plan, then it's just you take Krishna's plan of how to serve Krishna, but the goal of pleasing Krishna through your service is still there. Free will is operative at every moment. Say it, same thing, different way. We're making free will choices every moment. At the same time we're making free will choices every moment, the past free will choices that we made are acting upon us. One doesn't cancel out the other. Because there's some destiny, I have no free will. Or because I have free will, there's no destiny. It's not destined that I became a Hare Krishna devotee. It was the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. And you know, I happened to say yes instead of no. That was, you know, very fortunate. But had he not come, that wasn't destiny. It was his compassion, his causeless mercy. He did what he did. And some other people didn't do, although they received the same instruction. So because he did what he did, my life changed. That doesn't mean because my life changed, the past, you know, my chart changed. It's still the same chart. I was born at a certain latitude, longitude at a certain moment. So the stars, and there's other ways to read influences that are acting, you know, palmistry and other ways. It's just signs that indicate something. That's all it is. It's a science that people know the signs that indicate something. Some people know the science, some people don't know the science, but it's just a way to read influences that are acting upon us. But those even the influences, besides how we choose, the influences can change by devotional service. And that's not destiny. Prabhupada's explanation, somebody said, Prabhupada, is palmistry important? I gave you the response about astrology. If you know it's going to rain, you may take an umbrella. That's the astrology response. And the palmistry response is, go to Arti and clap your hands and the lines in your hand will change. Your destiny will change by taking part in devotional service. So we may and we may not have some interest in what are the influences that are going to be acting upon me. What's my chart? What's my palm reading? But it's not so important. That's our founder Acharya's take. Not so important. We may use it. Let's say, you know, in considering marriages, we may consult an astrologer. Good luck finding a good astrologer, for starters. Anybody been through this one? Because I've had some experience. Ask three different astrologers, you get three different answers in the same chart. If you get something that's close to the same reading from three different astrologers, that's remarkable. And who's right? This one, that one, or the other one? Take your pick. I'm not being facetious. That's my experience. And you try to get, you know, the best, and still you try to get the best, and that's what happens. It's something like, you know, read Bhagavad Gita, not from Bhagavad Gita as it is. Good luck. It's still Bhagavad Gita, but different people have different readings of the same text. So different. So there are certainly there are forces acting upon us. There are providential arrangements that are coming our way. We have free will at the same time. And the karma can change. The destiny of what's due to us for our past deeds can change. While still certain influences may continue to act upon us. So here's the second half of the verse. I'll read the translation. Can you put it up again, please? The living entity in the material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus, he meets with good and evil amongst various species. In the purport, two paragraphs. The first paragraph says, you get the body of a bug, you behave like a bug. You get the body of a dog, you wag tail and chew bones. You get the body of a demigod and you sit on a big throne. And, you know, even you can put a dog on a throne, but you put a bone in front of the throne, it'll jump off the throne and start gnawing on the bone because he's a dog. That's Prabhupada's example. So, once you get the body, you're going to behave different ways according to the psychophysical nature corresponding to that body, which is determined by our past association with the modes of nature. Then the second part of the purport is he's saying we create our own destiny, essentially. Sat asat, good and bad. How is he translated it here? Good fortune, ill fortune. We create that. So we can't blame somebody else. That's the point. We can't blame somebody else for misfortune. That's Yudhisthira's response to Nakula. Don't look at the short-term picture. There's the big picture. Like many lifetimes, big picture. And there's something back there that's bringing the good fortune, ill fortune, just in terms of circumstances. But then there's transcendental good fortune. Jigyasu Shreya Uttama Shabde Parete Nishtatam Brahmani Upasha Mashrayam, in the language of Bhagavatam. The advice of the Bhagavatam is one should be not only inquisitive, one should be inquisitive into Shreya Uttama, your ultimate good. That's transcendental. And that's a free will choice also. It's a free will choice that's available when one has received some intervening descending mercy. So a Vaishnava has contacted each one of us and extended Vaishnava compassion. And because they extended Vaishnava compassion, we had the option of a free will choice of saying, I accept that compassion and the fruit of it. Let me act within that very kind gesture that you've extended. And then we can grow Krishna consciousness or grow the life in devotion to Krishna. But it begins with Vaishnava compassion. And that's a free will choice for us to make also, to say yes to receiving Vaishnava compassion and also to extend that Vaishnava compassion to others. It's a free will choice. It's not a destiny item. Okay. So see if you have any thoughts you'd like to bring up or discuss on this topic. Destiny, free will, and karma. Yes.
How Our identification with Krishna's mercy and devotees' mercy, I understand that dynamic. But in respect to karma, if something happens to the devotee, how can you say that it's Krishna is tearing the wheel of the devotee's life, or is it his karma?
Your question was very complex and kind of mixed up. So, here's a principle. Two principles. When you take up devotional service, you're in the care of the internal potency. That's one principle. So if something happens while you're engaged in devotional service, that's not karma. It's the internal potency acting. The internal potency acts in such a way, Prabhupada described, that things that are in our past are presented before us as a token reminder of our past. He gives the example. Supposing you should break your arm. So you get a little, slap on the, as a token reminder. Just don't forget, a little while ago, a minimization reminder from Krishna. Don't forget. So, language that devotees use may be what you described. It's your karma. But that's not correct. Although the language may be like that, it's not correct. That's for someone who is unflinchingly engaged in devotional service. Second point. Practically speaking, devotional service or submission unto Krishna is intermittent. Yes? Practically speaking. Submission, relaxing. Oh, now I'm feeling miserable again, so I'll surrender to Krishna again for a little while. I'm feeling my distress is mitigated, so now I relax a little bit. Vacation from devotional service. So it's intermittent. And Prabhupada explained that one also. Mam chayo vyabhichareina bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahmavoyaya kalpate. And it's intermittent. Like anishtita bhakti. You're familiar with that phrase. Unsteady devotion. Sometimes, sometimes not. Sometimes, sometimes not. Unsteady. Until one becomes steady, one is unsteady. And so, I may be engaged in devotional service. And I chant Hare Krishna, and I offer everything to Krishna, and take only Krishna prasadam. And then, I take a break, and go do something stupid. And then come back and chant Hare Krishna, and so, when I'm doing something stupid, that's not, Krishna's mercy. One devotee was describing something to Prabhupada. There was some tragic, some very dumb thing was done, and then some misfortune came from that dumb thing. And the devotee said to Prabhupada, Krishna's mercy. And Prabhupada checked him and said, don't blame your stupidity on Krishna. That's not the internal potency, that's stupidity. And then there's reaction for the stupidity. So we can, in that unsteady state, we can move back and forth, proportionate to. So it's not black and white. It's there's shades of white and shades of black and shades of gray. But there's principles that are involved. When there's unbroken submission to Krishna, the misfortune that came to the Pandavas, for example, was not misfortune. That's the transcendental way of perceiving. Because that passage from Mahabharata where Yudhisthira is speaking to Nakula, that's a, it's not a transcendental explanation. It's a cause and effect explanation. But the transcendental explanation of their misfortune was so that they would become more dependent upon Krishna. And as they became more dependent upon Krishna, Krishna's kindness was to make them more dependent on him. They who already had love for him were put into a position where they become even more dependent upon him. And then Krishna would come to the rescue and save the day. Even in his pastimes in Vrindavan, those kinds of things. Misfortune, a forest fire. Not because, you know, they had some bad karma in their past. It's just Krishna was creating a situation where they would become more dependent upon him. And then he removed the obstacle or difficulty. Yes. Is it selfish to always remember Krishna? Yeah. His question is: is it or is it not selfish to only remember Krishna when you're in distress? What happens when you're having a good time? Not you, but you know. Why not remember Krishna then? Because we're having a good time, that's why.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a separate question. How do you come out of the cycle? Through association and cultivation. Association with those who are either out of the cycle or on their way out of the cycle, and through that association we can similarly develop that quality and cultivate it without becoming complacent in between. But it's not just, well, I use the word stupid because it's like strong and stark and like, but it can say it's softer, but it's still stupid. Here's the softer, Prabhupada speaking. He writes in Nectar of Devotion, there's a tendency for the mind to accept and reject. Sankalpa vikalpa, accept and reject. So it's very common that someone plans happiness. And so in order to get happiness, I have to have money. To get money, I have to have a means to get the money, a good job. To get the means to have a good job, I need to have an education. To have an education, I have to work hard. For a lot of years, I have to work hard to get a good education, to get a good job, to get some money. And then, so now, I'm working at my job, and I'm thinking, while I'm at the job, happiness is going to happen after I go on my vacation. And then it rains. Or something, you know, or 10 somethings, and then I, it's like children. They're not here. There's a few children. They can't wait till summer vacation. By the time summer vacation is over, they're really eager to get back to school, because I'm bored. I want to go back to school. It's the same. We schedule it, 5 days of work and 2 days of, in some cultures it's 6 days of work. In China, it's 7 days of work. They really like work, and anybody that works with Chinese people know what's that, what's it like. They're in the office and or the lab or the research, for 15, 16 hours every day, and they love work. Korean people. Anyway, so It's a different ethic, different modes of nature. But sankalpa vikalpa, it's the mind, accepting and rejecting, working hard, enjoying the fruits of my work. Now I want to go back to work and get some more fruits. I can enjoy more. It's just that vacillation. It's the mental plane. So devotional service can be regarded in the same way if it's done from the mind. Apply myself in devotional service and then enjoy the fruits of how I applied myself in devotional service. Take a break. So Prabhupada described it this way. If one thinks, I've worked very hard in devotional service, I deserve a break. Uh-oh. There's no break in devotional service. It's eternal. But if one thinks like that, Prabhupada described, it's not like then the person has to think the thought, okay, now a little bit of Maya. He said, no. Immediately Maya is there. As soon as there's some slackening, immediately Maya is there, engaging oneself in Maya, Mayic activity, like this intermittent thing. So it's where we direct our free will, submission unto Krishna, free will. And as soon as there's slackening in that, then that's a choice too. And it's an invitation for Maya. We don't have to say it. It's an invitation for Maya. Maya comes at once. He gives the example like when you turn your attention away from light. It's shadow. You don't have to wait. Okay, now shadow, you can come. Immediately, it's there. So that's our free will. It's a short leash. Krishna, or the absence of Krishna. And there's varieties of absence of Krishna. And within the realm of devotional service, there's varieties of devotional service. But the principle is Krishna. And Krishna's happiness. And then there's varieties within that. Something else? Yes?
How does the demigod worshipper's destiny get changed?
How does demigod worshipper's destiny get figured into this?
If somebody is not believing in Krishna, they also have a free will. Of course, that's what they are expecting.
This is chapter 17, Bhagavad Gita, Divisions of Faith. According to how they repose their faith, they get the reward. So, Nyanti Deva Vrata Devan, those who worship the demigods, they go to the planets of the demigods. That's a mode of goodness. It's not a transcendental, it's a mode of goodness position, according to Bhagavad Gita. And they get that mode of goodness destiny. And in between, they're piety increases in this life and prosperous in this life and then heavenly plan in the next life and then exhaust their piety and come back again to this plane. Kshinye punye marcha lokam vishanti. If one doesn't have faith in transcendence, one will have faith according to the modes of nature. Yes.
So Maharaj, during the class, you said that you give the credit to Prabhupada for giving. You said that it was his mercy that you were here. But when you see what Krishna says, based on your spiritual trajectory, if you are not successful in this life, in the next life, you will start from daily life. And still, you will have a choice to choose the path or not to choose the path. So, from that angle, if you choose, if you think, okay, I was at some point in this life and now I had a choice in this life to choose, so I choose this path, so why do we give the credit to someone else when we have chosen this path?
Why not? I don't see what you said as a why not. There's an instrument of Krishna's will. And that person who's the bearer or the instrument of Krishna's will is an agent of mercy. I'll say the same thing in a different way. There, you know, his divine grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So, in that his divine grace, does it refer to Krishna's divine grace, or does it refer to Prabhupada's divine grace? Some person can say Krishna's. Most persons would say his divine grace. That's the way that we address Prabhupada, his divine grace. Either way, but there's something inside that, you know, say Bhaktisiddhanta or Krishna or Lord Chaitanya willed, and someone accepted the position of being the bearer of that will. A great sacrifice, great risk, great, you know, tribulation, etc. So there's a free will choice involved in being the instrument of Krishna's mercy, his divine grace. All right? Yes. You got to speak up because you're way in the back.
You mentioned that free will, we are making decisions all the time. So, let's say in a particular situation, there is A and B, choose to do, and we choose to say B and the wrong one. So, you mentioned also that my name is Krishna, interfering in our decision. But that he knows that we want to take this decision even in the wrong one.
What do you think?
Well,
he knows everything, so why are you even asking the question?
So,
then here comes the next question. I'll help you with the next question. Or at least maybe many people ask this. If Krishna already knows, then what's the question of free will? Is that the question?
No.
Why
is nobody would take the wrong decision?
Oh, he does. We just ignore him. And he doesn't interfere with that if we want to ignore him. He, you know, within, we can list like a number of ways in which Krishna helps. From within the heart, he's saying, turn left, and you turn right. Or there's, you know, like, as far as there's scripture, there's representatives of God, there's God in the heart, there's brahmanas, there's so many resources to help us understand how to make the right decisions, and we make the other kind. Out of conditioning and, in short, out of ignorance, of out of ignoring Krishna. He helps, and we've got our attention elsewhere. He helps. Your question was, why doesn't he help? He helps. Come on, you've had a situation ever in your life where you're advising somebody and they make a different decision? Sure. Well, how come you didn't help them? Krishna helps in many ways. And we have free will. We can choose to say no to Krishna and yes to something else. For those who wish, in principle, I may not know A or B, but one thing I know is I want to please Krishna. Then Krishna, you know, the help comes because I'm receptive for it. You know, it's always there. But because when receptivity is strong, the help is there. Anything on the ladies' side? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I hear, I'm hearing. Just speak up. Yes.
So,
easy. I explained it. I'll do it again. One of the primary themes of Mahabharata, I'll just put it this way. Mahabharata is on one level and Srimad Bhagavatam is transcendental. Yes? So Mahabharata is teaching Dharma or the struggle between good and evil. Act on the side of virtue, you'll be protected by Krishna, by the Dharma Rakshata Rakshataha. So that's the teaching. Struggle of good and evil. And always be good, stay with virtue, speak the truth, abide by the quality of goodness, and you'll be protected. Even it may look like there's danger that you're facing because you stayed by the side of virtue. But you stay by the side of virtue and you'll win. Not, I mean, you'll be, the mercy will come to you. Be ethical. And that's where Bhagavad Gita begins. You know, discussion of what's ethical. And then all of a sudden the discussion is going into transcendental. So Krishna's pastimes are transcendental. And so what I said a little earlier was, the transcendental perspective is, Krishna was putting the Pandavas in difficulty so that they would become more dependent upon him. Krishna! And then Krishna came. That's transcendental. It's a lila to increase the intensity of love. And then Krishna comes. That's a transcendental explanation in contrast to or in comparison to a mode of goodness, dharmic rendering. So, you know, let's take from a transcendental perspective, what's the wrong from the, you know, like taking Maharaj Yudhisthira, what in the big picture, what wrong can eternal associates of the personality of Godhead do? It's not. He's explaining it in the context of there's reactions for wrongs. And we may not know what the cause is, what the wrong was, but we should know when some misfortune comes, it's because of some wrong that we've done. So abide by virtue. That's the message. Then the transcendental one is you abide by you become a lover of Krishna, and Krishna will always protect you. Sarva dharmam prityaja mam ekam sharanam braja aham tam sarva papebhyo. And that's like Dasarath. So he did something, you know, but it's he's the eternal, not just temporal. He's the eternal father of Ram. In Ayodhya, in the spiritual world, Dasarath is there. So it's teaching us the lesson. But even for us, you know, become situated in devotional service and reactions from past deeds are taken away. So what to speak of Dasarath? It's a lila. But within the lila, a certain lesson is being given for worldly conduct. Huh? Yes. It's part of the purpose of Mahabharata to teach us a lesson that Yudhisthira says what he said. But they're eternal associates of Krishna, all five of them. Wherever there's Bhoma Lila of Krishna, they're there. And part of his Bhoma Lila is to teach people of this world, stay in the quality of goodness. So Yudhisthira speaks the way that he spoke. But it's helpful. Part of the reason for giving this example from Mahabharata is, from time to time we're all called upon, most likely many times, multiple times in the course of our life, to help pacify somebody who is grieving over some misfortune that came in their life or to someone dear to them. Depends on the circumstance whether you want to refer to that passage of Mahabharata, because what's wanted is to relieve the person of that grief. For some persons that are a little more elevated, knowledge can help them. Okay. Sure, if you're a pure devotee, don't imitate. But sure, that's what happened to Arjuna. That's what happened to Maharaj Parikshit. That's just two immediate examples. Okay? Yes?
Is it true that karma is only accumulated in the human form?
Karma is only activated. Karma is only generated.
Yeah. So why not in higher or lower forms? Don't they have
in lower forms, they're just simply living out the fruit of their karma.
Well, the higher forms. Like demigods, you know, what Brahma, by example, the teachers,
mm-hmm. Yeah, they get reactions for their misdeeds, as do we. They generate new ones. Okay, we're done. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.